Welcome to the Sanlam ESG Barometer Series. I'm your host, Andile Khumalo, and you're tuning into episode 4, where we'll be exploring a very, very important question: ESG investing. Is it still a thing? Now, in recent years, ESG factors have been at the forefront of investment strategies. But as market dynamics shift, many are questioning their continued relevance and impact. To put this into context, the Sanlam ESG Barometer 2024 has highlighted key trends and insights regarding how organizations are navigating these challenges. Today, I'm joined by two esteemed guests, Ashley Daswa, all the way from Cape Town. He's the Senior Investment Specialist at Sanlam Corporate Investments. And right here in studio, I've got Mr. Zwelakhe Mnguni, Chief Investment Officer and Co-Founder of Benguela Global Fund Managers. And we're here to bring their expertise and their wealth of experience to really look at the current state of ESG investing, some of the challenges and some of the opportunities that lie ahead. We've seen some trends globally where people are very, very excited about it. It's went down, it seems, of late. Is it still a thing? Is it still an important thing that investors are looking for? Ashley, let me start with you, my good sir. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, given your insights, Senior Investment Specialist at Sanlam, what do you think is the current landscape of ESG investing? Do you still think investors are committed to these ESG principles? They're going for investments that have got ESG outcomes. They're avoiding investments that don't have those ESG outcomes. Or are you starting to see a bit of a shift?
Yeah, thank you, Andy, and good morning to your listeners as well. Yes, indeed, the ESG landscape is evolving, but the commitment from investors remains very strong, especially in the global challenges like your climate change and social inequality that are becoming more pressing. As you alluded to earlier on, the Sanlam ESG Barometer 2024 did illustrate that over 80% of respondents, including companies in South Africa and Kenya, have got explicit ESG strategies. And the key driver for this has been purpose-driven impact. It's not just about the regulatory compliance for them. And as such, we've seen investors to continue to see ESG as an integral part of their ESG risk management and sustainability and operational efficiency, with ESG consideration woven within their core business investment strategies to enhance long-term value creation. However, there's been pushbacks, as we just mentioned now, Andy, particularly in markets like the US, where this anti-ESG sentiment that is growing due to political divisions, concerns over greenwashing. However, this has been counter, you know, there's been sort of a proactive engagement approach, particularly in Africa, where we see, you know, most of the managers, they really want to balance this business growth with the social and environmental responsibility. And at Sanlam, we really prioritize those investments in terms of sustainable infrastructure investments, renewable energy, and inclusive social development projects. However, as you just mentioned, in terms of what are managers doing in terms of investment strategies, we can see, particularly in the global south, where, you know, most managers, they are now complying to the likes of the UNPRI. And it's not just about them saying that they're signatories, but they're also disclosing in terms of their reports. In the local front, there's been the advent of CRISA too, and we're seeing managers now increasingly reporting on that. As Zwelakhe is also in the room, it's not just a nice to have, but most managers to date, they're actually producing their stewardship or their ESG reports, which is quite encouraging. So that's what I could say in terms of the involvement of the ESG.
Got you, Ashley. Zwelakhe, what are the trends you're seeing? I mean, you're managing people's monies. You're taking people's savings, hard-earned money, and you're allocating it to these businesses. Are you seeing any particular trends when it comes to investing, you know, being led by ESG outcomes? Or is it still just about alpha? Bafuna return.
There are probably three areas that I'd like to highlight. I think the first one being, I think we are seeing investors pouring money into sustainable investing, which at the heart of it is the ESG. I think we're sitting at probably close to 7 trillion of assets globally that are allocated to ESG or sustainable investing related products.
Yeah.
And then it is expected to grow so fast that it could be between 25 and 45 billion in the next 3 years. So that the investment community, the asset owners are basically pointing in that direction, that ESG is important, they move in that direction. The second thing is that when you look at the organizations like CRISA, as Ashley's pointing out, CRISA, UNPRI, I mean, it is no longer optional to consider ESG. It is actually a fiduciary duty.
Really?
So we actually have to consider those risks and embed them into our valuation models, and it is part of our duty. So I think there may be short-term fluctuations in terms of commitment, but I think the trend is pointing in a direction where things are going to become, ESG investing is going to be the investing. The last point I wanted to just point out, I think from a corporate side, over time we've seen improvement in disclosures, and that has aided the ability to target specific ESG elements that enable you to say, what are the factors that work within ESG?
Yeah.
What factors don't work? So I think the trends are pointing in the direction of ESG becoming mainstream, and eventually it will take over. Anybody who doesn't invest based on ESG elements would probably be sidelined in the industry.
So that's how does it work, though? Is it I'm investing for a return, financial return?
Yeah.
Then I consider ESG, or am I investing for an ESG outcome and I'll take a fair return? What's priority?
I think things have been done wrong for so long that we actually never considered ESG. ESG should have been part of the decision-making process from the start.
Yeah.
In other words, there are risks that derive from a business operation. So if the business spills chemicals,
yeah,
there could be litigation. So in the past, what investors would do is they'd just look at the profit that the company make,
yeah,
but never consider the potential litigation costs that may come later. I mean, today, I think GSK has made an announcement that it'll be settling potentially $2.2 billion
wow.
of claims against cancer. So the failure to consider ESG was actually a mistake in the capital asset pricing models and in the investment world. So it is actually that you have to take it into account. It is not something that should be on the sidelines. It should have always been in the numbers.
Got you.
Yeah.
Got you. Let me come back to you, Ashley. Let's talk about these evaluation and reporting methods and models, and talk about how does it practically work? I mean, in your world, you are considering potentially a range of investments. Zwelakhe is saying it should be considered. It's not the only thing, just like financial returns ought to not be the only thing. What is your view on the standardization of those models? Are they adequately considering sustainability and ESG issues in pushing out an outcome? To borrow Zwelakhe's example, if indeed you did it good enough, could it have pushed out an outcome that said invest or not invest in a GSK as an example? How good are these models?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, to a greater extent, we have seen that investors, they are now focusing more on resilience and transition strategies, particularly in sectors that are high emitters or face, you know, these regulatory pressures, such as the example that Zwelakhe spoke about. If you look into the ESG barometer, it did highlight the fact that investors, particularly in Africa, they are increasingly willing companies that are managing this transition to low carbon operations, but also balancing their financial returns. And I think at Sanlam, we've been emphasizing this whole concept of, you know, ESG investments that are led in terms of genuine positive outcomes that should have occurred otherwise. However, this is all happening at the same time with this question of greenwashing, where, you know, some people are just, you know, because of, you know, the few standards that they put, they said this is ESG related type of investments. And as such, to answer your question directly, the investors, they are becoming more discerning in terms of data, transparency, and growing demand for the standardized reporting frameworks like your ISSB standards to avoid these superficial ESG claims and ensuring that there's really impact that has been achieved. If I can give you an example today, if we're talking about the same company that Zwelakhe spoke about, if you go to MSCI and you look at ESG score and you go to Refinitiv and you look at ESG score, and you get an S&P ESG score, they're all different. And that's where, you know, most of the critics of ESG, they say, this thing is not standardized, so how can we take these guys seriously? And I think it's important that for ESG to continue, there has to be these standardized reporting frameworks. And we've seen sort of progress over time, as I mentioned. Look, it requires collective effort from, number one, asset owners, As we mentioned, different pension funds that are out there, family offices, sovereign wealth funds, it requires regulators to be involved. It also requires the likes of the asset managers to come together so that they can harmonize all these different standards, because a lot of them, they're very subjective in nature. If you're defining what governance means, somebody else would look at it in different sense. And as I mentioned, the ISSB, they've come up with some standards. Even IFRAS, they've come up with certain standards in terms of what should be deemed to be sustainability.
Zwelakhe, your thoughts on standardization of models, taking the same company, looking at various indicators, all different, could spew out a different answer? What's the point then if we can end up with five different answers to the same question?
Look, I think the five different answers are a function of interpretation. I think data is coming through and it's becoming more and more standardized. And I think that's where the starting point is. And I think that things like the UNPRI have helped to push managers to demand that disclosures be aligned.
Yeah.
I think we've made some progress in that regard. I think the interpretation will probably remain to some extent.
Yes.
Because
that's the difference between asset manager one and asset manager two.
Exactly. But yeah. There's also a need to use scientific elements in terms of ESG. For example, if you run all ESG data on a blended basis, what you may find is you get things that cancel each other in terms of being a signal for good governance. So if you take something like board independence, it's one item that could be, if the board is independent, generally it leads to good outcomes. But you also have to go deeper and say strictly independent board members. So these are not guys that are not, that appear to be independent. They actually are. So the difference in performance between companies that show independence and those that show strictly independence, the difference in outcomes is different. So you also need to go back to say, in your interpretation, you need to understand the analysis has to be backed by science.
Yes.
And I simply think that there may be different interpretations, but there will be a common input. And I think companies are adhering mostly to that now.
I have to ask you this question as we wrap up, Zwelakhe. If I was talking to an allocator of capital who was in infrastructure, long-term assets, kind of you're in the position for decades.
Yeah.
This is an easier thing to do.
Yeah.
I'm asking you now, in the context of being an asset manager who has to look at markets every single minute of every single day.
Yeah.
Now there are fluctuations.
Yeah.
You know, today, mining is hot. Tomorrow, financial services is hot.
Yeah.
And the next day, something else is hot.
Yeah.
To what extent do you make those day-to-day, sometimes minute-by-minute, hour-by-hour decisions on the basis of ESG? Because perhaps something could seem so hot, so interesting, so compelling. You're like, maybe I'll just turn a little blind eye to the independence of the board, as an example. And I'm piggybacking on your experience on one particular company that you've been quite vocal of over the years, where you were always clear that you were uncomfortable about something in that particular construct.
Yeah.
To what extent do asset managers who run such funds, such portfolios, keep true to their conviction of whether company X is in a sustainable path or not? And therefore, no matter how tempting it might be, I'm not going in.
I think we've been privileged, I mean, at Benguela, that we've avoided all the disasters. And the reason is because we've built all decision making on the chassis of this ESG thing. So you basically say you can't buy into something when the ESG issues are so obvious and they are problematic. So it might look attractive, but it always catches up with you later.
Wow.
So you always have to think about how that base of ESG, their minimums, and you cannot, I mean, I'll give you an example. In China, there's a company that we bought, ZTO, and management started buying logistics businesses and selling them to the listed company.
Mm.
So related party transactions, we sold the stock immediately. attractive. Wow. We had done well on it, but as soon as it happened, we sold the stock immediately. So they're thinking that I'm going to linger on, maybe I might get an extra 2-3%. You might actually lose 40%.
Great way to segue and wrap up the conversation. So, like, thank you so much. Ashley, thank you also, my brother. Thank you so much for your input, you two gents, sharing valuable insights. And I guess it's a conversation that's going to continue forever, right? Because all these businesses are run by human beings, and human beings are fallible. So if you can use certain measures that indicate to what extent are they likely to come up with good decisions for your investment, I'm sure that will stand you in good stead. Well, coming from these two experts, I will take a lot of comfort from that. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. This brings us to the end of episode 4. Join us for episode 5, where we'll be tackling the topic, so we won't reach the SDGs by 2030. What now?